Hey everyone, this is Achyut Bhava from Nightlight Astrology, and today we are going to take a look at Mars's conjunction with Pluto, which is coming up shortly this week. Today into the next, say, 2 days, you'll really be feeling it. Before I do that, I want to remind everybody that two of my teachers, Loka and Vidarbha, are holding a class on the Bhagavad Gita. It's coming up soon. If you go to bhaktiwise.com, and you scroll down, you can learn more about it. It's called Unlocking the Mysteries of the Bhagavad Gita. It's a 12-week immersion. It is by donation. Click on the Study With Us tab. You can scroll down to learn more about it. Starts March 15th, runs through May 31st on Tuesday nights from 8 to 9:30 p.m. Eastern. Everything is recorded if you can't make it live. There's also optional daily mantra meditation lessons available for you to drop in on. Those are free. So it's a great class, two of my favorite people and teachers. I hope you guys will check it out. That being said, let's put up the real-time clock and take a look at what Mars is doing, which is going to be our focus for the day. It is a new moon today in Pisces. And I will just briefly say that if you watched my March overview, I mentioned this new moon and gave you a little bit about gave you some of my thoughts about the new moon for the moon cycle ahead. So be sure to check that out if you haven't yet and you want something on the new moon. Basically, the gist of it is that we've got a new moon conjoined with Jupiter as the sun is conjoining Jupiter. The new moon is configured in a sextile with Uranus. There's a feeling of breakthrough in the air, this great kind of redeeming promise of Jupiter-Neptune forming. But we have some difficult astrology between now and later in April when all of that promise sort of manifests. In the meantime, Venus and Mars are going to go through Pluto. They're going to conjoin in Aquarius, and then Venus will be in a malefic enclosure for most of the month of March. And on the 19th of March, you'll see Venus hitting a square to Uranus, and I think we might see some shift in the momentum for Venus around that time, but it's a very difficult spot for Venus. So we're looking at that. The other thing that's happening is today, as I'm making this, Mercury is in a conjunction with Saturn. So, you know, another transit to kind of keep our eye on. But I felt like today we really need to place our attention on Mars's conjunction with Pluto, because that is just such a dynamic transit. It's very powerful. So we look, if I advance this one day to Thursday, March 3rd, you're going to see Mars going through the conjunction with Pluto today into tomorrow. Then Venus tomorrow goes through on Thursday, March 3rd. So it's back to back. Today, I'm going to do Mars Pluto. Tomorrow, I'm going to do Venus Pluto. So that's our order for this week. Now, given that Mars is conjoining Pluto, I decided it would be good to talk a little bit more about the archetype of Mars, especially given the fact that the topic of war is very much on a lot of people's minds right now. And astrologically, it's a good time to meditate on this archetype. Now, I will say, for people who are listening to this, who don't want to think and talk about such a heavy topic from an archetypal perspective, right? Which means we're deliberately distancing ourselves on a certain level from what's happening in the world and the horror and outrage of the warfare itself in the world right now. So we can feel those things, and we can also take a step back to meditate on the archetype of Mars. But if you're not feeling in the mood for that, or if that feels like, you know, that's too much of a task for me right now, then, you know, just make sure you don't listen to this, because I certainly don't want to amplify people's feelings of anxiety, fear, or frustration. But so we're going to talk about Mars today and Mars Pluto, and that's not always easy. But that being said, one thing that I really want to focus on for us today is here's the thesis for the day. In order to know the archetype of Mars, the god of war, who represents more than just war, but war is one of Mars's big, biggest archetypal swaths of land. Okay, so you know Mars has the real estate market sort of, he's got it cornered a little bit when it comes to like conflict and war and aggression and hostility. That's sort of Mars's territory. It's not certainly not the only planet that can be can give signs for war or conflict, but Mars sort of, you know, that's sort of Mars's territory, just like Venus is going to be love or beauty. So when any planet hits Pluto, especially in a conjunction, there's going to be this titanic release of force relative to the archetype, oftentimes coming up from what feels like a pent-up place or a place that is less seen or understood. So that subterranean volcanic expression of Mars is potentially front and center for us right now in our personal lives, clearly on the world stage. And yet one of the things that happens with Pluto as well is that we are overtaken by the powers of the unconscious, which means that even though an archetype is expressing itself in the light of day, sort of really overt and in your face, there's a way in which we can become possessed by it. This is why I use the hashtag grabbed, the grahas, the grabbers. These are the administrators of the energetic flow and unfolding of our reality. And so as such, you know, one of the reasons that we're doing astrology is to be able to identify and participate in their unfolding, as opposed to just being swept along like, you know, debris and you know, sticks and stuff just being carried along a river with fast currents. You know, we want to have some amount of agency, some amount of participation. And I'm not suggesting we become, you know, controllers of everything or something like that, but we are conscious entities, and it helps to know which direction the wind is blowing in, and to be aware of that. Well, when any planet touches Pluto, one of the things, okay, it can be released with this kind of titanic primal force. We can also become possessed by it. And so one of the archetypes you'll also hear associated with Pluto or transits to Pluto from other planets will be that which we come to understand because it's been hidden in the unconscious, or there's some way in which we get taken over by something only to have to separate and get some distance or some understanding of. Pluto will reveal to us things that are hidden, in other words, things that are hidden in this case within the presence of Mars. So today I wrote this talk called "The Hypothesis That in Order to Know War, Mars, We Have to Know Where It Hides, Pluto." And I mean, again, Pluto can obviously be more than just hidden stuff, but one of Pluto's meanings is that which is invisible. And so in order to know war very deeply, develop intimacy with its presence as an archetype, separate it now from all events, right? We're talking about understanding its presence in the psyche. And as such, we have to know where it hides. So here are 10 ways in which war hides that I've been meditating on as I wrote this talk. I started writing the talk yesterday. Before I read it, or before I tell you about these 10 ways in which war hides, I want to read you two quotes that come from James Hillman's book on, really a book on Mars, which is called A Terrible Love of War. And these are two quotes that I was reminded of by one of my students named Brian, really nice guy, who sent me these quotes as he was reflecting on what's happening in the world right now, the Mars-Pluto conjunction, and reading this book, which you've heard me mention in talks previously. So this is from Hillman. "To declare war normal does not eliminate the pathologies of behavior, the enormities of devastation, the unbearable pain suffered in bodies and souls, nor does the idea that war is normal justify it. Brutalities such as slavery, cruel punishment, abuse of young children, corporal mutilation remain reprehensible, yet find acceptance in the body politic and may even be incorporated into its laws. Though, quote, war is normal, shocks our morality and wounds our idealism, it stands solidly as a statement of fact. This normal round of warfare has been going on as far back as memory stretches. During the 5,600 years of written history, 14,600 wars have been recorded." And he goes on and on, but I just wanted to use those quotes because if there is any place that war hides, just generally, I'm going to go through 10 ways in which war hides as a meditation for today. But if I were to say one place generally that war hides, it is in normalcy. We tend to think of war as something extraordinary, and it is. There's a certain way in which war is extraordinary. It is somehow an exceptional state that is different from other states and puts us on high alert, you know, understandably. It's horrific. At the same time, one of the ways that war hides most, maybe the biggest way it hides, is in its normalcy, which means its reality as an everyday experience. It's easy enough to feel like it's exceptional when we're seeing actual big wars unfolding. But its everyday reality is sometimes forgotten or not even noticed. And I don't mean that every day there are wars going on. Of course, there's conflict and violence every day all over the world. But I'm talking about something even more mundane. So here's 10 ways that war hides. And a lot of this has to do with an exploration of language and of the subtleties of our everyday psychological states. If we want to unpack Mars or recognize it right now in our lives, I think it's easy to spot it in the big things. It's harder to spot it in the underlying everyday mundane. So here they are in my own life. I'm only speaking for myself. If you care to join me, you know, in this, you may. If not, then I hope it's at least, you know, a good meditation to consider today. So it hides in my repulsion. Every day I am repulsed by things. It could be very little. It could be the color of something, an advertisement, whatever. It could be anything. It could be something my daughter says, whatever. But every day there are moments that I have of repulsion. It's an experience in my mind, in my body. And the etymology of the word repulsion means to drive back. So to have the experience of being driven back by something in sort of like disgust or dislike, that's an everyday part of my experience, and that's a Mars experience. If I can picture the etymological roots of the word to be driven back by something, and oftentimes what I'll do when I'm repulsed is drive back at the thing that suddenly drove me back. So in our everyday experience of repulsion, there's the god of war driving into us as we drive back at whatever repulses us. Sometimes we don't drive back, but even having the experience of being driven into somehow and feeling repulsed by it, that's Mars. There's the hidden everyday presence of Mars. It hides, number two, in congratulations. To congratulate means to celebrate victory. And you can look at the word victory as well, but congratulations, celebration, and victory all have the connotation of winning etymologically, which means that anytime I feel like I'm congratulating myself or congratulating someone else, I'm acknowledging that somehow I've risen to the top and or somehow I've won. Now, maybe the thing that I've won hasn't been, you know, I haven't brutalized anyone, you know. So we're talking again about the subtle everyday normalcy of Mars, because it's from this pervasive level of the archetype that the that we mistakenly think that an archetype is exceptional when it shows up in some huge way. In other words, if you're not in touch with Mars on an everyday level, it's possible that you'll only be able to see Mars in these very gross ways, and then it can feel alien and separate from you. And ironically, you're more likely to then have a kind of relationship with Mars that is very polarizing and confrontational. And ironically, what we want with the god of war or from the god of war is in some ways to have some intimacy with that god, which does not mean that we condone or justify brutality. It means that we understand the reality of that God in our own lives, because that's what generates compassion. That's what generates empathy. If we don't understand Mars in ourselves, its presence in our own lives, then it's harder to generate compassion and empathy, and we end up being at war with war. And that's maybe the worst place that we want to be, in a sense, because it's exactly in that space that we tend to get grabbed, that we tend to get seized. It hides in congratulations. Number three, it hides in the excitement that we feel when conflict arises, as if conflict is an indication that something real is happening, breaking apart the feeling that life is superficial or boring. Conflict literally means a contest, and a contest has the sense of game and play involved in it. And I'm not suggesting that we're all sickly celebrating brutalities in the world, but for me, I notice that there are times where when conflict arises, I get excited. I wouldn't call it joy, but I would call it a kind of excitement. And it's like a gravitational pull, the excitement is, because where there is a contest, people tend to gather like they do in arenas, gladiator arenas, sports arenas, people circling around the two kids in high school who are fighting. Fight, fight, fight. Why do people do this? There's something about it that feels like the underlying tensions that are always there are now being expressed. And there's something about it that can feel relieving. Now, mostly I'm talking about this in my own life in very basic and small ways. I'm not someone who loves seeing, you know, people hurt one another or anything like that. But I'm talking about the fact that conflict generates a level of excitement and engagement that we often feel drawn to, because there's something that feels, where there's conflict, there's contest. And where there's contest, there's an element of play, and there's an element of spectatorship and a sense of something being at stake. And oftentimes we're drawn to that with a kind of enthusiasm. I'm not saying it's right, I'm just saying it's common. I remember still when I was a young boy and I was in college, I remember when 9/11 happened, I did not at all feel gladness or joy that that was happening, but I was excited. I was really excited. I remember being excited to tell people who did not know. And I don't mean by that that I felt excited that people were dying or that brutal, horrible things were happening. I felt like, wow, that something really real and important is happening. And I need to share this with people. And like everyone else, I was glued to the TV set in both wonder and horror. And what I'm trying to point to is not any kind of glorification of those things, but the fact that we, on much smaller levels, are drawn into that exact thing that we tend to call horrible, that somehow we still drive down the road, and when there's an accident, traffic slows down simply so everyone can look at it as they're driving by. That's a gravitational pull. That's a Mars-Pluto kind of thing, where that hidden force, the excitement, the feeling of there being something contested, urgent and real that's happening, that breaks up the accord of peace, the status quo, people are drawn to that. People are drawn to drama. I'm just admitting it, that's all. And I'm not saying I'm proud of it. I'm just saying it is a natural psychic reality of our lives. It's something that happens in small ways every day. So that's where Mars hides. Number four, it hides in urgency. Whenever we feel urgent about something, sorry, my camera is somehow, I think it's picking up on my mic a little bit too much. It hides in urgency. Whenever we feel really urgent about something, morally, spiritually, in terms of our agenda for the day, our relationships, wherever there is urgency, urgent means to press and to drive hard. Those are Mars words. So even in urgency, Mars is there. War is there. It hides in righteousness, number 5 on my list. Righteousness means to be straight and to stand straight and not crooked. It's one of the etymological meanings, as in like a sense of I am right and strong and proud and tall and it gives the image of like a posture. And Mars is in that posture, the righteous posture, the strength that's there in righteousness, that we're attracted to being righteous because it's somehow a posture of strength that we find attractive. That doesn't mean that righteousness is good. You know, often enough, righteousness is really arrogant, but we're attracted to righteousness, and it hides there. We often think of righteousness as right and good. You know, if I have a righteous cause, then it's right, you know? But what we don't pay attention to is the posture where the warrior is there standing tall and strong and proud. And my righteousness elevates me, right? That's there. The god of war, the knight is standing there. It hides in caring. I know that sounds weird, but did you know that caring means charged with a view to something's safety and protection, to care? So when we think about protecting something, keeping it safe, I care about this thing. Mars is there. Mars, the martyr, same root word, who would lay down its life in care or protection of something. So there's Mars. These are the places Mars hides in our everyday lives. It's harder to be completely outraged, shocked, and thrown off our center when massive things happen in the world. They will happen, because we've spent every day getting to know the presence of that god. And we know that there are times when it possesses us, and we know there are times where it's going to bubble over in very big and explosive ways. We're familiar with this god. Number 7, it hides in morality. Morality has behind it the standard of right conduct. And where there is righteous conduct, there is a sense of knightly code. There's a sense of the code of conduct is very closely related to the code of war, the way in which you act or behave so as to preserve peace and protect against war or discord. So even in morality, there is a sense of the warrior's protection, right? So it's there every day. Mars hides in these things. We don't necessarily think of Mars. We tend to only think of Mars in terms of the terrible face of brutality and war and stuff like that. But Mars is in us every single day. Number 8, it hides in our feeling of offendedness. Offendedness, the action of attacking or being, or I'm talking now about, like, let's say I'm offended by something. That means that I feel as though I have been attacked. But also, interestingly, etymologically, to be offended, the word also means to be annoyed. And what I find so interesting about that is, of course, offended in a sense on the offense, to be attacked or to attack someone or to feel that you've been attacked, but also to be annoyed, irritated, or vexed. Vexed means to have been jolted out of your center. And so there's something every day where we're struggling. I'm offended, or I feel offended. And then we're like, well, I'm not going to feel offended because I've been jolted out of my center, and no one's going to push me out of my center. So, you know, and I wish that everyone would just shut up about being so offended, because I'm so offended by everyone being offended, because I'm so sick of everyone being knocked off their center all the time. Sit up straight on your horse, my good man. You know, sit up straight and be a knight. Don't be vexed so easily. Don't be irritated out of your center. Irritation, burning, agitation, frustration, being vexed. Those are all Mars words traditionally in astrology. So, you know, that battle within us. No. What are you telling me, that I should always be strong, that it's not possible for someone to injure or harm me? You're telling me that it's up to me to choose whether I'm offended or not? it's like two things can be true simultaneously. Someone could be a jerk and have offended you, but you also don't have to be vexed by it. And both of those are interestingly caught up in the etymology of Mars. I find it interesting that if we're honest with ourselves, we get offended pretty regularly. I mean, people attack and offend us in little ways every day, and then big ways too. And it can be true that that person really offended us. It's this weird false choice we create where we're like, only you can allow yourself to be offended. And what they really mean is only you can allow yourself to be vexed, which is different than being offended. Being offended means you were attacked. You can be attacked and not be vexed, or you can be attacked and talk about it and feel that some justice should be done or something should be addressed without also being irritated or vexed out of your center somehow. Anyway, I'm not telling you what you should do or shouldn't do or think or feel. I just find it really interesting that the word offended breaks down into not only attacking or being attacked, but also being annoyed or vexed, being irritated or jolted out of a center. Isn't that just fascinating? I think a lot of, you know, if I think about it politically or socially or culturally or whatever, everyone talking about, you know, PC culture or how easily people are offended or whatever. And I think less of it really boils down to, this is just me thinking archetypally. I'm thinking like an archetypalist, a symbolic thinker. And I'm just thinking, gosh, it really boils down to differentiating Mars a little bit more. Like when I read this, I was like, well, that makes total sense that there is the reality of one word offended means both to be jolted out of one's center. And maybe there's some sense of a choice in that, but also to be attacked, in which case there's no choice in that. And somehow we want to act like it's this binary. Well, you either choose to be offended and otherwise, you know, you're impenetrable and no one's really attacking you. You're just choosing to be offended. And it's like, well, it's not that simple, you know? So if we just had a little bit more imagination about words and language, and we took the time to carefully differentiate our experiences when it comes to being harmed and harming, when it comes to how we respond to being harmed and so on and so forth, there's not just one right response. And, you know, so sometimes I think it's less about issues and more about not being thoughtful enough about what experiences are actually like. Anyway, I'm going to war, so I will keep going. Number 9, it hides in our wars on drugs, our war on cancer. I think it was George Carlin who pointed out, gosh, for a society who wants to find peace and not war, we should think about not going to war on every single thing that we want to fix. A war against violence toward women. It's like, oh, come on. Is that the right metaphor? I don't know. I mean, it's so absurd. We go to war on all these things. And so many of our so many of our daily metaphors are war-based as well. Take your shot. You know, have you taken, you do it, take your shot, you go for it. You know, there's so much of the language of every day is like, evokes the image of the warrior, and we don't even think about it. But then we're completely baffled by the presence of war in the world. It's like, well, not saying, again, it doesn't normalize or justify war or aggrandize it or anything, but it's like, well, should we be so shocked when Mars is present every day? You know, we have like a, you know, imagine if you had like a knight clad in like 200 pounds of armor, like the mountain from Game of Thrones, a 7-foot tall, you know, warrior with a broadsword the size of your kitchen table, lumbering around in your house. Like you wouldn't mistake it. But that's the truth of what we also have walking around in our psyches every day, in a sense. So, okay. Finally, it hides in peace. The peace, Latin word pax, to fasten together. So you're taking things that have been apart and you're fastening them. So implied in the act of peace is a joining of what is separate. And so anytime we're talking about peace, we're also acknowledging the presence of division, strife, separateness, discord, and so forth. It's there in our drive for peace. I over the years, you know, one of the ways I recognize it is, okay, I'm going to slap something on my, I don't know, I'm thinking back in the day when I was on Facebook. I haven't seen this on Instagram so much, but something would happen and you'd replace your profile picture, you know, with something that you're supporting. And I did this a bunch and I don't regret it at all. I felt like I was a part of something cool. And I'm not sure anymore if they still do that, 'cause I'm not on Facebook, but I seem to remember at some point there was like three lines, and it might've been in support of gay marriage or something like that. This was like right when some laws were being passed, maybe. I can't remember, but anyway, you get the idea. You're supporting something, so you put it, you know, as your profile picture to show solidarity. And I always am a sucker for those things personally when I was on Facebook. And I was thinking about this as I was writing today's talk. I was like, it's like war flags, you know, it's like, oh, here's my banner, you know, and I'm on my horse and I'm riding into my job today. I'm making fun of myself too. No one who does it. This is just me and my dark humor, but I'm riding into my day, you know, as a dad and an astrologer with my banner flying on my Facebook page of what I'm supporting, you know? And it's like, I think of myself as a peaceful person. And I guess my point is that I don't imagine myself like riding into battle, but it's little things like that, that Mars shows up. And if anything, that's how, if we're going to change or find healthy expressions for that archetype in our lives, in our collective, we have to get to know it. It hides in normalcy. So I don't know. That's just my thoughts for the day. I'll read these quotes again. To declare war normal does not eliminate the pathologies of behavior, the enormities of devastation, the unbearable pain suffered in bodies and souls, nor does the idea that war is normal justify it. Brutalities such as slavery, cruel punishment, abuse of young children, corporal mutilation remain reprehensible, yet find acceptance in the body politic and may even be incorporated into its laws. The war is normal, shocks our morality and wounds our idealism. It stands solidly as a statement of fact. This normal round of warfare has been going on as far back as memory stretches. During the 5,600 years of written history, 14,600 wars have been recorded. So I hope that you are able to grasp something uplifting from today's talk. I certainly don't mean for this to be some kind of get over it. You know, it's just, no, I want us to get to know it. That's all. And that's what I'm doing right now, as there's war in the news and a lot of people are around me are talking and reacting to it as I'm, you know, taking it in. And it's, there's war every day, of course, but some are going to be more in the headlines and in your face. And there's transits where collectively we're all drawn like a gravitational center to contemplate this reality. So as I've been doing that for myself, this is what I've been thinking about. And I hope that you guys find it useful as well. If you have any stories you want to share about Mars Pluto this week, use the hashtag grabbed. Put your story in the comments section or email us grabbed@nightlightastrology.com. Hope you guys have a great day, and we will see you again tomorrow.